Hello, everyone, and welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I am the head of European macro research at Natixis, and with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello also from my side. So today we'd like to discuss about central banks' frameworks for liquidity provision and monetary policy implementation and potential reform proposals that have been brought forward for these frameworks. For this, we are very pleased to have with us Tobias Linzert from the ECB, who's an expert in this area. Tobias is advisor and analytical coordinator at the ECB's Directorate General Market Operations. And as I said, he's a specialist on these topics. So welcome to the podcast, Tobias.
Hello. Thanks a lot, Dirk and Klaus, for inviting me. And well, just to say that I provide, of course, my personal assessment and not the views of the ECB.
Yeah, great to have you with us, and we're very much interested in what you have to say. So the general public and also market participants usually focus on interest rate decisions that are taken by the ECB Governing Council, and much less on the way these interest rate decisions get implemented. So taking a decision on interest rates is one thing, but then follows the plumbing that makes sure that intended policy stances actually get reflected in market interest rates, usually some overnight interest rates between banks or other financial institutions. And perhaps not surprisingly, the way the ECB implements its monetary policy has changed quite dramatically since the start of the monetary union. And in particular, following the 2007-08 financial crisis, this was sort of the watershed moment in ECB plumbing in terms of implementing rate decisions. Can you perhaps explain to us what the original setup prior to the 2007-08 financial crisis looked like at the ECB and why the financial crisis made it necessary to abandon that framework?
So yeah, that's absolutely true. So implementation frameworks of central banks have, of course, changed quite a bit since the start of the global financial crisis. So before the financial crisis, most central banks, and including the ECB, have operated in so-called corridor systems. And in such a framework, the corridor is made up of three different interest rates. And in the ECB's case, we had the main refinancing rate, which was our main lending rate, and it was forming the middle of the corridor. And at the bottom, or the floor of the corridor, there was the deposit facility rate, at which banks can deposit reserves at the central bank. And at the top, or at the ceiling of the corridor, there was the marginal lending facility, a lending facility that banks can access anytime at a rate that is higher than the main refinancing rate. And so prior to the financial crisis, the key liquidity providing operations were these main refinancing operations, the MROs, and the key policy rate was then associated with the interest rates on these main refinancing operations, because the liquidity provided through these operations would then ensure that interest rates, so overnight market interest rates, would settle close to that policy rate, so close to the MRO rate set by the Governing Council. And that this happened, so that overnight interest rates would be very close to that that policy rate and the MRO rate, this was generally achieved by supplying liquidity just as much as the banking sector needed. And these liquidity needs were traditionally determined by the demand for banknotes and reserve requirements that banks had to hold. So it was actually fairly straightforward to estimate these liquidity needs and to provide the corresponding amount to the banking sector. Of course, we also had at the time unforeseen liquidity shocks, so overnight rates could show also volatility and could move away from the corridor. But generally, I must say, there was rates were generally controlled rather well, because indeed the liquidity needs of the banking sector were rather clearly to identify, and so liquidity was just provided as much as the banking sector needed. But with the onset of the financial crisis, of course, that changed quite fundamentally. And banks wanted to hold central bank reserves, not just to fulfill banknote demand and required reserves, but banks suddenly wanted to hold liquidity buffers because reserves were a rather liquid and safe asset at the time when other assets lost exactly that status during this time. So this suddenly prompted quite a demand for central bank reserves. And at the start of the financial crisis, the ECB still tried to anticipate these additional needs and provide these amounts to the banking system. But it became very quickly clear that this was rather challenging as this reserve demand was rather uncertain and also fast moving. And so that triggered quite some volatility in money market rates. And therefore, in October 2008, the ECB moved to a so-called fixed rate full allotment procedure. And in this way, the ECB would elastically supply liquidity to the banking sector, fully satisfying their liquidity demand, their reserve demand. And as a consequence...
Wouldn't that have been the better system from the start? If you want to target a rate, I mean, you just provide as much as is needed to get it into the market. Wouldn't that have been an option also prior to the financial crisis, the system?
I guess that would have been also an option prior to the crisis, but prior to the crisis, there was still the notion that interbank market activity was an important mechanism also for banks to redistribute liquidity in the system. And actually, there was no issue with this liquidity distribution because the market was functioning very well. There was no hindrance to any of these trades. And that, of course, suddenly changed. And during the financial crisis, where exactly that interbank activity broke down quite a bit, and because banks didn't trust each other, banks wanted to hold liquidity buffers and therefore also didn't offer that liquidity to the market. And so again, from this moment onward, it was important that the central bank stepped in and to provide it liquidity elastically to the market. But as a consequence, of course, from of this switch in system, banks would hold more sizable levels of reserves and liquidity, and therefore, from this moment onwards, overnight interest rates actually fell to the bottom or the floor of the corridor, and were from then on largely anchored by the deposit facility rate.
So one consequence of the change in the implementation of monetary policy, i.e. change to full allotment, but also past large purchases of financial assets by central banks, implied by the ECB that the excess liquidity, i.e. the amount of central bank reserves in the system beyond what is needed to fulfill the reserve requirements, was enormous. And that obviously begs then the question, whether that has made ECB's job or any central bank's job in attaining price stability more difficult, or is there two goals? All of a sudden, providing liquidity, inflation to get inflation a target. Is there potentially a conflict there?
Well, first of all, I think the term excess liquidity might be a little bit outdated because excess liquidity actually means or meant that the level of reserves that banks hold over their liquidity needs coming from so-called autonomous factors, mainly banknote demand and reserve requirements. But as I mentioned, since the global financial crisis, reserve demand in the banking sector has changed fundamentally. So banks now wish to hold reserves as liquidity buffers to conduct payments or to cover for unforeseen liability outflows. Reserves are also a very safe and liquid asset that, of course, also have regulatory value for banks. And so that's why banks actually now would like to hold a lot more reserves, what's implied by autonomous factors. So I would like to consider, let's say, more reserve demand, independently over whether that's in excess over banks, banknote demand or reserve requirement. But it's true that that probably reserves in the banking sector are of course higher than they are strictly demanded by the banking system. And of course the increase in reserves that we've seen was largely a consequence of the asset purchases conducted by the ECB to compress long-term interest rates to stimulate the economy at the time when inflation was way below our target. But independently during that time, the amount of reserves in the market was rather helpful also for the achievement of the ECB's policy goal. The abundant level of reserves actually allowed or kept money market rates closely tied to the deposit facility rate. And this, of course, has helped the smooth implementation of the policy stance, as money market rates would also then move smoothly in sync with the respective policy decisions by the ECB's governing council. And in any case, while there are still ample reserves in the system, the overall demand by banks is, of course, rather uncertain. But also to say that it's not only uncertain, but also too little reserves in the system can also be costly in terms of triggering, for example, money market volatility and stress. And that also has been seen in the past history, when reserves fell below a certain level, that triggered clearly money market volatility.
So you think, if I may take it out of your answer, that having a large amount of reserves is not in conflict with achieving an inflation target, even though when the goal was to get inflation up prior to the COVID pandemic, it was argued that these reserves would also help in getting inflation up.
So now we're in the opposite environment.
Or we want to perhaps bring inflation down, yeah. We still have the large excess reserves, but you think they are not in conflict with bringing inflation down?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think of it rather from the perspective that, okay, now central banks are clearly in the situation where they are shrinking their balance sheets. And the key question, of course, for all central banks around the globe is, to what level of the balance sheet they can actually shrink their balance sheets. And so the key question is actually, what is the level of reserves that banks would like to hold in the future? And that's the question that central banks are assessing, and that's what they are trying to get a better understanding of. And the reason is, and just as it was before the financial crisis, the more clarity the central bank has over the liquidity needs of the banking sector, the better it can calibrate the right amount of reserves to be supplied, and the better it can actually steer money market rates in line with their policy rates. But of course, and as I mentioned before, there is a lot of uncertainty over the precise level of reserve demand and the desired level banks wish to hold, because of course new sources have developed over the time since the global financial crisis, and And actually, reserve holding preferences are still changing. So they're also subject to still change over time in the future. So, approaches, of course, also differ with which central banks around the globe are trying to find this new equilibrium, or trying to find this new level of reserves to which they can shrink their balance sheet. So, for example, the Federal Reserve, they are reducing their balance sheet in a rather cautious and gradual manner to ensure that they still leave enough reserves in the market to keep money market interest rates anchored at their policy rate, and to keep, of course, volatility contained. And if you remember, the Fed had already reduced its balance sheet back in 2018-19, but in September 19, repo rates were spiking up quite significantly, and there was a lot of volatility in the market. And so that was generally interpreted at the time that reserves indeed had reached a level, at least in some parts of the U.S. financial system, where it fell below a certain level that banks would feel comfortable with.
Right. So do you see some potential side effects from operating with a large amount of reserves in a policy framework? I mean, I could think here of the volatility of central bank income, but also on other aspects where maybe having a large amount of reserves, maybe more than what is strictly demanded by the financial system or the banking system, could have side effects. Do you see drawbacks to having, or is it just we can grade it at zero marginal cost for society? Why not have it as large as we want, just to make sure that we don't see any deviation in short-term money markets from the policy rate? Is there an upper bound somehow, that you would say where negative effects from large excess or large provision of reserves by central banks would show up?
I think in the first instance, I think the let's say analytical question is foremost to first find that new level of reserves, and to be sure that you have a good understanding of what is the reserve demand by the banking system. And of course, this reserve demand will ultimately depend on also the respective financial system that banks are operating in, but also to an extent, it will depend on the way also central banks will supply these reserves, and at what price central banks will supply reserves, and also, of course, will depend very much on the opportunity costs of holding other safe and liquid assets, government securities and other types of safe assets. And so I think that that is the big question. And I think many central banks are analyzing these questions very carefully, have already, of course, also decided on some routes they will follow. But there are still a lot of uncertainty also out there.
I mean, can I dig a bit deeper on that question again? How can a central bank assess indeed that new need? I mean, what the kind of estimates you need to do, which kind of econometric panel models you need to run or whatever? I mean, how do we, or will this always be so uncertain that you can say, it's not worth trying because it changes constantly, or is there any hope to get a better grip on what's then the demand for excess liquidity in this new environment we find ourselves in?
No, I think that's a very good question, and indeed there's also I should say probably also quite some progress out there now. So indeed there are many or various avenues that can improve our understanding on the future reserve demand, Well, the first, and again, there's some quite some effort and also progress to identify indeed these new sources. I think that's the first step, you know, to really make sure that you can name them, that you can identify them. And of course, these resources, these sources, you know, relate probably to factors such as, you know, payment services, again, to cover for deposit outflows. And I mean, of course, the recent events in the US banking system are a case in point here. There's the demand stemming from regulatory requirements, but also, you know, reserve buffers that banks wish to hold in an environment where they would still see potentially some market segmentation and fragmentation in, you know, in also in money markets that may not to a full extent be able to redistribute liquidity in the system. And again, I mentioned the 2019 event in the US, which was clearly related to a certain segmentation of the US money market. And second, many central banks are conducting or have been conducting surveys with the banking sector. For example, the Fed and the Bank of England, they have surveys in place where banks provide you know, their own estimates and their insights into what they would consider a comfortable level of reserves they wish to hold. And third, there's of course also growing academic research that analyzes the sources of banks' reserve demand, and they also provide estimates of the demand curve. But of course that's challenging, no, not least as these this research is inherently backward looking. So of course. You know, to what extent these estimates are then a good guide for the future, that obviously has to be seen.
Right. So let's assume now we somehow knew what the right amount of reserves would be. Then there's still the question, you know, you want to satiate, you want to just provide that, you want to provide more than that, how much more than that? That's one issue. But then also, you know, what on the asset side of the central bank's balance sheet, how do you provide it? What sort of assets do you purchase or hold in order to provide this amount of liquidity? So, you know, what's the reasoning on that asset part, and maybe on the side, how far above the estimated demand you need to be?
I mean, the short answer is probably that a mix of instruments is probably the most useful. And this is because asset purchases and credit operations that are, let's say, traditionally the instruments used by central banks, they of course inject and distribute liquidity differently to the financial system. So, for example, credit operations are traditionally operated with banks, so they, you know, distribute liquidity within the banking system, while asset purchases are also conducted with non-banks. So it's also a source that you know, brings liquidity into that part of the financial system, if you want. So central banks, you know, around the globe, of course, also have taken already different routes. So some central banks have already announced, you know, the way they would like to operate also their operational frameworks in the future, and so they have indeed taken different routes depending on the structure of their financial system, but also I guess on how these central banks have traditionally operated also before the financial crisis. So for example, the Fed in the US has announced to continue to operate in a floor system with ample reserves. And in order to provide reserves in an ample manner, they communicated to provide reserves through purchases of treasury securities, which they had already mainly done also prior to the financial crisis. And in this way, the Fed, of course, is able to fully control the amount of liquidity provided to the system. But at the same time, of course, the Fed needs a rather good estimate and a good understanding of what are the aggregate or and also individual liquidity needs in the system. I mean, at the same time, they also have, and that's why they also have a bit of a mix of instruments in place. They also have strengthened their liquidity backstops through lending operations, especially after the recent events around SVB and the other banks that came under pressure in the banking turmoil. They have clearly stepped up their liquidity providing instruments through also credit or lending operations. And likewise, the Bank of England has announced or already announced how they would operate in the future, namely also like the Fed in a floor system. But unlike the Fed, the Bank of England will reduce actually its existing bond portfolio and then provide liquidity to the market mainly in form of credit operations. They also announced that these operations will be operated in a fixed interest rate with full allotment procedure. So again, this ensures that the Bank of England can elastically satisfy the liquidity needs of the banking system and steer money market rates close to the policy rate. So of course, which route again the different central banks are taking and how they inject liquidity very much depends on their financial system, their operating traditions. But I think what's common across all approaches are two things. First, there is the clear desire by central banks to satisfy the reserve demand of the banking system, and so to cater for these new sources of demand that have arisen since the financial crisis. And the second thing that is unifying across central banks is to also have multiple tools in place and also to be ready in crisis situations. And of course, the SVB case in the US or the LDI turmoil in the UK are cases in point. And of course, also to use tools like asset purchases when policy rates hit again their effective lower bound. But regarding the future level of reserves, of course, as I said before, there's still a lot of uncertainties out there. And so it's just very important to continue improving our understanding and to monitor also this demand over time and to see also how indeed these reserve holdings or the reserve demand can also change over time in the future.
So I'll try then a short summary of what you said as usual and ask you whether you're okay with that. First of all, the change in implementation plumbing at the ECB. Before the crisis, the financial crisis, there was the corridor system, and that was there not least because it was easy to estimate the liquidity needs of the banking sector, but that then changed dramatically during the crisis and it became more and more difficult to know how much liquidity was needed, and that led to the shift to full allotment. So every liquidity need would be fulfilled by the ECB. Is excess liquidity a problem when achieving price stability? First of all, you don't like the word excess liquidity because you said there's just more demand, though it remains very difficult to know where that is. There's an argument to be made that it helps smoothing money market movements and therefore is actually helping implementation of monetary policy stance as it is. So you don't see really a problem here. Negative side effects of excess liquidity. The difficulty here is to know where the demand is, and that would need to come first before knowing whether there is any problem or collateral damage through excess or through the amount of liquidity that is beyond, say, minimum reserve requirements. Then again, what's the amount needed in this new world of liquidity we're finding ourselves in? And you said would be important to first analyze what new sources of demand are there. There is examples of risk of segmentation of money markets that needs to be taken into account. The changes in regulatory environment important, but central banks have done surveys to get a better grip on what this demand is. But you stress as well the uncertainty here is high, which means there's a lot of scope for future academic research. So Klaus, that's for you. Then how to manage liquidity, bond portfolio or credit operations? You said a mix of both is probably what's needed, not least because they target different audiences, so to speak, or market participants. And that's what you find in among all the central banks, at least the ones you follow, i.e. they want to satisfy the liquidity demand of banks, but also have multiple tools. We live in an uncertain world, and it's always good to be prepared in that sense. Was that a fair summary of what you said?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much.
Then thank you for your time. And well, speak to you then at some future point again, I hope.
Thank you. Thanks again for inviting me.